Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org and the studios of WNYC here in New York, it's time for another live performance in our Soundcheck podcast series. Streaming live on Facebook and YouTube, I'm John Schaefer. Guitarist Stefan Rembel is one of the world's leading interpreters of the music of the great Django Reinhardt, whose so-called gypsy jazz revolutionized the sound of the guitar in the 1930s. Stefan's most recent album is called Django l'Impressionniste, Django the Impressionist. But on January 23rd, the 110th anniversary of Django's birth, Stefan will release a new record called The Django Experiment, Volume 5. Today, Stefan Rembel is here with his quartet to play some music for us, but he's going to start us off with a solo performance. This is Django Reinhardt's arrangement of T for Two. That is Stefan Rembel, live here in our studio, solo performance, although you'll hear his quartet in a moment. That is Django Reinhardt's arrangement of the 1924 song T for Two, written by Vincent Eumanns originally. Stefan, it's great to see you again.
Great to see you too, Jen.
So this actually appears on the album Django the Impressionist.
Yes.
Which offers us a little bit of a different side of Django Reinhardt's playing. I mean, he's known for that kind of, you know, jazzy, hot club de France kind of style that he did with Stefan Grappelli. What was this impressionism thing?
Well, you know, like Django comes to us from history. So we take one side of it. We take what comes at us, you know. Mm-hmm. But then we don't look at the roots, really, of it. It's been labeled gypsy jazz a little bit quickly. In fact, Django Reinhardt was a big fan of Debussy and Ravel and Bach, like all the music that was played when he lived in Paris, you know, like he was born in 1910 and the music that was played in Paris back then was that, what we call the Impressionists.
Right.
That's like his foundation. His whole foundation is in what we call classical music, which was the music played back then, you know.
Well, how did he come to create this style of music?
So, you know, Django is a genius at everything, harmony, rhythm, all that, at music, really. Harmony is like the grammar of music. It's like the sense of chords and all that. And he naturally had a sense of it, like a very deep, profound sense, a bit like probably like Mozart or Beethoven, Bach. Like these guys, they have like an innate sense of harmony and how the voices are organized and all that. And for him, hearing Debussy and Ravel and Satie and all these guys, it immediately, as a young child, probably printed in his mind, this is how music functions. So then when swing arrives in France in the 20s, I like the word swing better than jazz. Jazz is a bit more vague. Swing is, at least is like a form of rhythm, you know, that comes from New Orleans and gives a special like rhythmical angle and melodies and all. So when it arrives, Django is already a classical master. In his mind, he already has that figured out. So when jazz arrives, he's able to like cruise through the harmonies of jazz and the rhythm of jazz with his knowledge of classical music. It's a little bit like if Debussy would have played jazz, you know, except on the guitar. Plus, the guitar has certain characteristics that are unique. They're different than a piano, different than a violin. So not only he comes from the classical music, but he also felt a new way of approaching the guitar. In my sense, like way closer to the true nature of the guitar, you know, he went to the very deep root of the guitar.
Now, this is all pretty extraordinary stuff, the music making, starting with classical, hearing swing, creating this new sound. But the most extraordinary thing about it is at some point, he loses the use of two fingers on his left hand, the hand that we stop the strings with.
On top of it, yeah.
So he's playing all of this with three fingers.
Okay. So it's not exactly like that. He burned his left hand. It actually burned the top of the left hand. So it kind of like damaged the tendons. And he could not fully use the last two fingers.
The ring finger and the pinky.
Yes. So they were kind of like a bit folded. So he could not use them really for soloing. He probably did at some point. But most of it is only two fingers. And he used those two fingers, the last two, for chord playing. So he could still play like crazy chords and all, you know. He plays like voicings that require a lot of stretching and all. There are photos of him playing like what we call a sixth inversion, a chord with the third in the bass. And these are like quite complicated to play. They are like hard to maintain. They require power and all. And he was playing them no problem, you know.
Well, play one.
This one.
And folks who are watching us can see that there's a bit of a stretch involved.
Yeah,
there.
And there are photos of him playing, actually, I think it's the exact chord, you know, like flat with like a D in the bass. So it was possible for him to use these two fingers in some context, you know, but not fully.
Yeah.
But most extraordinary is his musical ideas, you know.
Well, now, how closely does your own story parallel? Did you start in classical music and then listen to popular music and find your own way to this?
Yes, I did. I started with classical piano when I was four. My mom told us always, I have two sisters, and she said, you're going to study classical piano because music is part of education, and that's that.
Well, good for mom.
It's like math and reading and all that. It's music. You just learn it, and whatever you do with it, you know, it's not the problem. But music, especially classical, is part of education. And so that's a great tool for my entire life to have studied a classical piano at a young age. You know, it stayed, you know. So when I studied the counterpoint, like harmony and all that, it always came handy to like know at least a little bit of piano. Plus playing classical at a young age shape your ear in a different way than anything else forever.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really grateful for that. And then, of course, in my time, the music that's played is, I was born in 74. So my first musical memory is The Wall by Pink Floyd. It's one of the first. That's my first love. You know, when I was 5 years old, I fell in love with The Wall. And
so David Gilmour's guitar playing.
Oh, yeah. And then I started guitar for that, you know, because I wanted to play Pink Floyd. So that's like when I was 15, I think I started. So I started playing guitar for that. I quit piano. And then when I was 19 or 20, before that, probably 18, I discovered Django for real, you know. I knew Django, but it was not very popular back then.
Yeah.
It was almost forgotten, you know. We knew Django because we were listening to it. Our fathers were listening to it. And when we were like 14, 15 years old, and we used to go get drinks in pubs and stuff because, you know, we were in France.
You could.
It was the mid-90s, and we could go like have a drink like in 1990 at age 15, whatever. Let's not talk about that. We would always like meet Babi Krenart. He was always there having drinks and stuff, like Django's son. So we knew he was okay. Babi, and Patrick Sossois was around too, playing and all. Like, it's, we knew these people, plus he swam from. So naturally, when I was like 18 or 19, I went to Django, and that was like the beginning of a journey, you know. He became my master, you know.
Even though he had been dead by that point for decades.
Exactly. So he was my master, and he still is my master. You can always, your entire life, you can transcribe Django and learn from Django. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, it's always a source of joy and inspiration. It's like Bach, you know. You can always play some Bach, and it's all, or Mozart or Beethoven.
Yeah.
It's an endless source of joy, or Chopin.
Well, now, the piece you're going to play next, and we'll bring the quartet in for this, is one of your own compositions. So do we hear that kind of journey in your own music?
Yes, this one is still connected to like the Django-esque kind of world. It's not swing, but it's still connected. I have songs that are definitely more esoteric and all that, but this one is still like pretty, I don't know how to say. Like, I had, when I composed it, I had in mind a little bit of a Middle Eastern rhythm, you know, with like darbuka and stuff like that.
Right, the jar drum,
but it turned out to be like, maybe, I don't know. What we do. We're just going to do it. It's called Apocalypse.
Play it, and then we can see what it's all about. Stefan Rembel is here with us in the studio with Thor Jensen on guitar, Ari Folman-Cohen playing the bass, and Nick Anderson is behind our drum kit. Here is a song called Apocalypse. That is Stefan Rembel and his quartet live here in the studio with an original tune called Apocalypse. You can hear the Django Reinhardt influence. Stefan, you're getting pretty good on that thing there, the guitar. Should you stick with it, I think. Now, what is that instrument that you're playing? Because that is one beaten up, old looking, much loved, obviously, guitar.
So this is a 1943 Busato. Busato was a guitar maker at the time of Selmer, of McCaffery.
And at the time of Django.
Exactly. So McCaffery started building this kind of guitars for Selmer. So they are called the Selmer McCaffery. They started early 30s, I believe. And Django played this type of guitar. There are differences. Don't ask me how, because I'm like really bad with everything that has to do with wood. But they're different, okay?
Yeah.
And this one is made in Paris in 1943, and it was Django Reinhardt's brother's guitar, Joseph Reinhardt. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds great, at least in your hands. I don't know what it would sound like in anyone else's, but that was pretty impressive playing on that song called Apocalypse.
It's a great instrument.
So, Stefan Rembel performing on January 23rd. I mentioned that's Django's birthday. It's the 110th anniversary of his birth. That's the day you're releasing this record, The Django Experiment,
yes.
Volume 5. And so Stefan will be playing at Joe's Pub on January 23rd. Then later this spring, you're going to be doing the annual Django Agogo Festival. Now, that's something you've been doing for like 15 years, right?
Something like that. I started in 2004, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So 16 years.
Yeah.
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 What was the idea behind that?
So first I wanted to install the music of Django in New York City and create a festival that has like a real artistic touch that comes from like the roots of it. You know, I learned with the gypsies. So I wanted to bring that vibe, you know, that...
Where did you go to learn this music?
I'm from Fontainebleau, so this is where Django was from. So there's a lot of gypsies there, and there's every year a big festival there called the International Django Festival. That started in 1968. And then north of Paris in Sanoa. It's funny because Django was in Samoa, and this town where I used to go is Sanoa. And I used to play in the Ziegler family up there for years. And I learned with like many gypsies everywhere. So I wanted to bring something authentic in New York City with the authentic vibe and sound and freshness, you know. Mm-hmm. My first impression with the gypsies, I remember, is like one guy sits down, he starts to strum a few chords. Another guy takes a guitar, sits down, and they start playing a song. It just works like that. It's very like refreshing and immediate and instant, you know. So I wanted to recreate that vibe, you know, something not too cerebral or anything, you know, like something really authentic. So little by little, we developed from playing one weekend at Barbès to like adding a few clubs to do a full weekends at Joe's Pub. And then we started taking the festival on tour, like touring the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And then in 2017, March 3rd, so I remember because it was 3/3/17, was the big show at Carnegie Hall. So we went one notch up with a week-long festival now, concerts every night. And we did that big concert at Carnegie Hall with Stokelo Rosenberg, with Aldi Meola, Larry Keel, Ryan Monbleau. And the idea was to bring great American players. See, Aldi Meola, for example. Sure. The year after, we had Sam Bush, for example. Mm-hmm. So we always had like great American players. And it's very important, I think, to bring the American touch with the gypsy stuff, you know? How can I say? Like bluegrass to United States is what Django is to us, you know? Mm-hmm. And there is a link somewhere, you know? And the idea about the show is I bring some guests from France and so very carefully chosen guests because I know who can play with whom. Mm-hmm. And then bring the appropriate American guest to fill also with that whole lineup. And we create a unique show. So now we are based for that annual show at the Town Hall in New York City.
Right.
So once a year we're at Town Hall and we have that big, big show.
And this year it's on May 9th.
May 9th, yeah.
So when you started doing this, did you find that you had to constantly explain to people who Django was? Did people a song like Nuage never really disappeared. How familiar were Americans with Django?
When I first arrived, not familiar at all. When I first arrived in Berkeley, for example, no one has ever heard of that.
See, that surprises me. That really
surprises me. They were like, what are you playing? What is that? And students, I got in trouble because students would go to the head of the guitar department and ask if they could learn to play Django like that, and they didn't have anyone. So that they actually told me to stop playing that at school. But whatever, it's a different story. When I moved to New York, no one was playing that. I was the first one, I think.
Wow.
I really didn't know anyone, you know. There was a little group of guys who started to try to learn and all. So I had like a few students. I started playing like in French venues and all, and little by little it developed, you know.
Yeah.
And I think like around 2005 or something, it started growing. And you know, with the social media getting bigger, suddenly with the iPhone and the social media and all that, it just took off. Yeah. And everyone started discovering Django. Well, and now it's all over Facebook and all, you know, worldwide.
Recently, I was interviewing Martin Scorsese about, you know, his love of music and how it informs his filmmaking. And he said it all goes back to his father's record collection when he was a kid growing up in New York. And especially, he said, the Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli records. That was his first kind of deep musical experience and one that he's constantly coming back to. So, you know, there were little pockets of interest in Django's music here in New York.
Yeah, and it's funny because a lot of artists, whether they're filmmakers or musicians, they know Django, you know. They don't really talk about it. But if you read I was surprised, I was reading the autobiography by Frank Zappa, and he is explaining how he goes to Paul Simon's house in Los Angeles, and he said Paul Simon was lying on the floor in his living room, his head between the two speakers and blasting some Django Reinhardt. he's everywhere, you know? Yeah. He's been there, always.
We're speaking with Stefan Rembel, the composer, guitarist, champion of the music of Django Reinhardt, who part of the reason that he sort of fell off the map was he died young. He was 43, right? When he died. Now, the tune you're going to play for us next, Dark Eyes, this isn't one of his, it's not one of yours. Where does Dark Eyes, this is an old song.
It's a Russian folk song, but I don't know if it's a gypsy Russian folk song.
Oh, this is Ochichernoya.
Yeah, Ochichernoya.
Ochichernoya, right.
Yeah, yeah.
My Russian pronunciation isn't what it should be, perhaps.
Mine either. But yeah, Ochichernoya, Dark Eyes.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like the gypsy anthem, you know?
Yeah.
A very popular song among the gypsies.
All right, well, let's hear a live performance. Once again, Stefan Rembel and Thor Jensen playing the guitars, Ari Folman-Cohen on bass, Nick Anderson on the drums. Here's a live performance. Thank you. is Stefan Rembel and his quartet with a version of the Russian folk song Dark Eyes here in our studio. The guitarists watching us online probably have their jaws in their laps right now. It's, again, some amazing playing. Now, everybody in the quartet will be part of the town hall gig on May 9th, right?
Oh, yeah. And you are like 15 on stage.
Yeah.
I'm bringing like four masters from France, living legends such as Raphael Faïs and David Gastine, Laurent Estin, Sébastien Félix. I'm bringing musicians from New Orleans, Russell Welch and Aurora Nyland, the four of us, David Langlois on washboard, Daisy Castro on violin. We're like 15 on stage. Jean-Michel Pilk on the piano. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be an incredible show.
So that's mark your calendars. That's May 9th at Town Hall, the annual Django Agogo Festival. And there is the January 23rd concert at Joe's Pub, marking the anniversary of Django's birth and the release of the Django Experiment Volume 5.
And also, we have a guitar camp on May 10th.
Yeah. The day after.
Town Hall, there is a guitar camp where all day long we offer workshops with all the musicians are going to be playing. Like
so
all
you
those
can
masters.
Teach me to play like that?
Oh, yeah.
In one day.
In one day.
Amazing. All right. So now, Stefan, you did the theme music for the film Midnight in Paris some years ago, which, you know, certainly raised your profile a lot. Are you still doing film music?
Oh, yeah. I have one coming very soon. I can't speak about it just right now, but very soon I will be able to. We're recording the soundtrack next week. I just finished it.
For a major American filmmaker, we can say.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, it's been great having you in the quartet here with us. Congratulations on this spate of recent recordings. And
thank you, John.
Thank you very much. Great to see you.
Thank you. Great to see you, too.
This is Soundcheck. That'll do it for this edition of the Soundcheck podcast, but as always, there's much more to be found on our website. Lots of other performances, video shot in the studio, the daily gig alerts, weekly music roundups, new sound shows, and more. Check it out at newsounds.org. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our associate producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.